Hey, it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. And I'm Dr. Lisa. How you doing? I'm coming at you live on the air. It's a very exciting day for me. I haven't done this in a while. Do you know it's our 5th year anniversary this week? That's right. I got to tell you something. It's the 5th year anniversary, my birthday. And the station's executive director and founder, Tom Tenney's birthday, okay? All in the same fucking week. Can you get over it? So, what I think you should do is, I think you should help us celebrate. I mean, like right now, independent media is more important than ever. You guys know this better than I do. I mean, you people out there. So, a really great thing to do would be to go to radiofreebrooklyn.org, all spelled out, slash donate, and help keep us going because it's a really, really tough time. And our community radio affects a large group of people. So, it's not just the station, it's a lot of people all over. So, as for our, this is actually the 5th anniversary of my show since I am one of the proud founding members of Radio Free Brooklyn. I've been here from the beginning. So we have a special surprise today. I actually have Tom Tenney, the station executive director and founder on live. Hi,
Hi,
Tom.
Lisa. Dr.
So,
Lisa, excuse me. I know.
Dr. Lisa, right? Is that what you were going to
I
say?
did say doctor. I said Lisa and then I said Dr. Lisa. I forgot where I am and I forgot your honorific and I'm very, very sorry.
No, actually, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at all, folks. So the thing that's really funny, and I think I'm sort of going to surprise Tom with some of this too. I don't know if Tom's prepared for this, Tom. You're never prepared when you're on the radio with me, though.
Throw it at me, Lisa.
Okay.
Dr. Lisa.
You can call me Lisa. And anyway, the thing is that so 5 years ago when I first started doing this show, doing being part, the station was started, I for the first did my first show ever. And I have a big authority figure problem, which because my parents hated me, whatever. I was afraid of my parents. They scared me. All adults scared me. And authority figures, like I somehow placed Tom in the category of an adult authority figure 5 years ago when I met him and he was, basically running the station and I knew nothing. I just couldn't believe I was going to be running a radio show, my own radio show. So anyway, so to overcome my own fear, and we talked about countertransference at the time, which is this is what it is. To overcome my own fear, I had Tom. I am very proud of myself. I attacked my own fear right away by having Tom as my first guest so I could get over my fear of authority and my fear of failing at the station. Tom, you remember that? Do you remember how I was
I
like afraid
remember
of
it well,
you?
yes. I do. And my confusion as to why you would think of me as an authority figure, but
No, it and do you remember this, Tom? I had forgotten about this. And I'm encouraging you guys to go back to the first show ever, the show that I'm referring, and it's going to be posted on Facebook along with this. It is posted on Facebook right now. I had broken the microphone right away by tripping over the cord. Did you remember that?
Yeah, it wasn't, I don't think it was a microphone. I think it was like the CD player.
Oh, some piece of equipment during the training before I'd actually done the
Did
live
I
show,
freak
which I
out?
had.
I might have
And
freaked out.
you really freaked out. And I remember because I'm a neurotic and I was so uptight about how I had fucked that up. And I paid for it
You
and it was
did.
solved and everything.
Yeah,
and then we talked about how you were okay with it.
Well, I mean, you have to understand too that at that time we only had like four pieces of equipment, so that was one of the reasons. I was terrified that if anything broke, we would just not be able to do, you know, anything. So, but I apologize for freaking out about it.
We've had lots more
equipment break since then, and I've chilled out significantly.
Well, you have. I want to get into that. But I also, you know, it's just kind of like, I just want to go back just to reminisce. And I really think anyone that's interested in the station or any kind of big, huge project, taking charge of a big project on your own, it was really nostalgic to go back there and listen to the show and listen to you talk about how insane it was that you were starting this whole radio station. And I dug into what in your personality would actually take on something like this. So it was a really great show. Do you remember the feeling that you had when you started this station 5 years ago?
Yeah, sheer terror. I mean, it was really, really frightening because this was something that I didn't really know how to do. You know, I was kind of winging it, and I had to come across like I wasn't winging it, like I knew exactly what I was doing, but I was really so insecure about it, about the whole thing. You know, I mean, I had done some audio stuff in grad school, but I had never started anything like a radio, and I had worked for media companies for a long time, but I had never done anything like starting my own, you know, radio network like this. And it was, you know, I just hoped that people would have faith in me. And I tried not to, I felt very vulnerable, but very afraid of showing that vulnerability.
On the show or in general?
Both. Yeah.
You didn't project. No, you sounded like, you know, pretty much in a way that it was going to work out. Like you had faith that it was, you did project faith that it was going to work out. I will say that.
Well, sure. But also you were a brand new one of a handful of hosts that I had at the time. So I wasn't going to try to project my vulnerability and my doubt to you especially.
Yeah. Well,
I'm not saying I was lying to you. I'm just saying that, you know, even when you're on the, you know, psychiatrist's couch, sometimes you are aware and, you know, try to project a certain, you know, image.
Well, I will say you did that. And, you know, we did get into some vulnerability in some other places, maybe, you know.
Sure.
Talking about girls and shit. You were pretty good. You were very open about your intimacy issues. And also, what I was also reminded of, you had some great stories about things that you had been through that where you just kind of forged ahead. Like you, it felt like you kind of had this sense of that if you really put your mind to it, you really kind of convinced me that if you put your mind to it, you could accomplish anything. Like how you got yourself, you wanted to go to this private school and it didn't seem like you were going to make it. And then you finally got in at the last minute. You got a $20,000 check out of the blue in the mail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and that was a life-changing event for me because that is something that changed my whole outlook on being able to do things because I was, you know, I was told that, you know, you're not going to try to do this. You don't have enough money. You're poor. And I was just convinced that I could. And I mean, you know, despite the fact that the money coming from out of nowhere wasn't my doing, I feel like the success was because had I listened to those people, to those voices, I never would have. You know, the check would have come and I would have already given up. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Like I said, you guys should go back to listening to it. But just so there's no suspense, what happened was Tom didn't, you know, his family couldn't pay for him to go to this private school that he really wanted to go to. And I think it was like right before you had to either say you were going or not, Tom got a check. This is so crazy. From like the state that was an inheritance that he had no idea. And it was $20,000 and it was totally like random and totally clean money. It was his money that he had no idea he was going to get. And for a high school kid to get a check of $20,000 out of the blue at the right moment was pretty inspiring, I'll say that. So let's talk about what's happened with the station. I mean, it's so ironic that we're talking about the 5-year anniversary and we're in this like pandemic quarantine COVID state. Isn't it funny? To me, it really speaks of survival instincts. What do you think?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it reminds us all about how vulnerable we are, you know, to, you know, something as simple as a virus that could literally kill us all, you know?
Yeah. Well, I have to say, just from my point of view, this is one of the few things, or maybe the only thing that I'm involved in that I feel like because of the pandemic is thriving. So for me, and I'm sure a lot of other people, it's been a really great thing. It's probably a lot more complicated on your end. So what's it like in the moment right now?
Well, I wouldn't use the word thriving right now, because we are, I mean, we're always struggling, but this has thrown a wrench in the machine that we could not have foreseen.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we're doing our best to keep it up and running. And I do have to say to all the people who have donated to Radio Free Brooklyn so far, thank you so much. We had a fundraising drive where we tried to raise $25,000 by yesterday, actually, which was our 5th birthday. And we ended up making about half of that. But that half is going to keep us going through the rest of the year. If we had not made the money that we did or raised the money that we did from that fundraiser, we would not be here talking right now.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, just to be clear, I'm only talking about my little corner of the station.
Sure.
That's why I'm turning it over to you.
Well,
I have no idea about the big picture.
And I think that is true about a lot of people. I mean, one of the sort of silver linings about this whole thing is that since a lot of people now are broadcasting live from home, that's a whole new skill set that they had to learn. Right. So this is now they have proficiency in, audio hardware, in selecting audio hardware and setting it up and how it works, and as well as the software and all the sort of details that you need to know about broadcasting live on the internet. So I feel like through this, you know, this kind of accident, we are actually able to help people further their kind of, you know, media education, which is one of the things that we set out to do. Initially, you know, as Radio Free Brooklyn, I mean, we are an educational institution as well as, just broadcasting music and talk shows.
Yeah. And that is a really amazing, I mean, I think that's one of the things I have found so gratifying, but I also think it's one of the things that I think you've created, Tom, is a community. And I think that's something that you talked about from the very beginning, from 5 years ago. And I think that's one of the things that makes the station so strong. Like for listeners that don't know, the station has a happy hour every Friday on Zoom, and that's really kept the spirit of the station together. But can you talk about the development of the community from your point of view, Tom?
Sure. I mean, communities are funny because you can't really create a community. Communities create themselves, right? So you can't say, I want to create a community that's going to be this, 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 and this. You can aspire to those things, and you can put things in place that will help you get to where you want to go with a community, but it's never, ever going to turn out exactly the way that you imagined it, because people are people. They're individuals. They're going to bring to it different kinds of things that you couldn't have imagined. So, and that's honestly one of the great joys of sort of, you know, helping bring a community into existence, is that you get to see what really special individual things people are able to contribute. And but I think that the most important is the willingness to contribute, the willingness to be and the desire to be a part of a community. And that's one of the things that we struggled with at the beginning, was that we had, you know, we would bring on shows, and then some of them would just, you know, leave 6 months later because they weren't really interested in being a part of a community, and that's fine. But what happens is, the more, you know, as you time goes on, you attract more and more people who are interested in being, you know, something that is greater than the sum of its parts. And those people stay. And the and so it's like a snowball, you know, like the, you know, it gets bigger and bigger, and still some snowflakes kind of fall off as it as it rolls along, you know, still happens. Mm-hmm. But the more and more people there are that are really invested in creating a community like this, the stronger it grows.
Mm-hmm. Is there any way you can sum up any of the characteristics of the community from your point of view, like what kind of community, or what the people are like, or what the missions are, like what's come out of it? I mean, you, like you were saying, that you can't control what kind of community. So you, like, how does, did it fit with the vision of the community, or what's surprising about the community?
It's surprisingly close to the vision, to the way I imagined it at the beginning.
Really?
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, I think when I was creating communities online, when I worked at VH1, right? So I created like an online community for Flavor of Love, and which was a reality show on VH1 when I was working there. And, you know, we imagined it to be a certain thing. And what it ended up being was this weird kind of quasi dating site, which we did not expect. So sometimes it can really go off the rails and or into a totally different direction. And I think that, you know, part of being successful in having people move towards your vision is to sort of, first of all, to find people who share that vision, but also to sort of gently, you know, sort of, you know, guide people in a direction that they feel like they found on their own. Mm-hmm. Right. So they feel like, so that they feel a sense of ownership, as opposed to just like, oh, I do this show for this organization and then, you know, whatever. People who we have now are motivated. They're involved. They are very nice. you have to be nice to be a part of Radio Free Brooklyn. That is like really the one and only requirement.
I agree. I think it's an amazing group of people. One of the things that I always, you know, the thing that I always tout about the station is that you don't get really judged on like your, how many listeners you're bringing in. You get judged on your commitment to the community and how serious you are about doing your show and the things that really matter.
Yeah.
Which is another thing that I think that why this station is so appropriate for this time, because I think this time period, the pandemic, is causing people to think about their values and ethics more. And I think this station is, you know, is really, it's I think that's one of the things that's going to give the station longevity and survival.
Sure. And like what I was saying about broadcasting from home, I mean, if you like broadcasting, then what a great thing to be able to do from home while you're locked up. You know, totally. It's the perfect quarantine activity.
So what about your role in the community, Tom?
Yeah.
Because you are definitely the leader of the community. There's no question about that. And So tell us the good side of it and tell us the dark side of it. It's got to be gratifying in a lot of ways, but it's also like a kind of a lot of pressure and responsibility, no?
Yes. So, I mean, basically those are the good and the bad side, right? Is that, the good side is that I get to see this like wonderful, beautiful community emerge, from something that I helped create. And yeah, the dark side is that it is a ton of work. It is a ton, and I don't get paid for it. So, sometimes you just feel like throwing up your hands. And most people would have at this point if they were in my position. If you did not have a total just dedication and love for doing this, there would be absolutely no reason to do it because the reward is in the creating this thing. And if you're not really interested in that thing, you would have run away from this 4.5 years ago.
But pride, you must take pride in it. Let's hear about it.
Oh, I to take
No,
true.
but like, doesn't, I mean, like, here's the thing, guys. We haven't had a mixer in a while, but I mean, we have these monthly meetings, and it's like this amazing group of people in the cafeteria of one of those we work like place 100 Bogart. We love them, and there's all these people, and they're all coming together. And Tom really has a, leadership is a talent, really, because I think you can have good ideas and you can have drive, but I think leadership, the kind that you have, Tom, and I'm not just saying this to kiss your ass. I wouldn't say this to kiss your
I
ass.
know.
I'd say other shit if I really
All
just wanted to kiss your ass.
right.
But I think that it's a real talent, and I'm wondering, I mean, you've had other big projects and other similar leadership roles, but how is this different from you than like how does this feel like as a leader?
I mean, I've had other leadership roles, but none where I was sort of, trying to lead a group of so many people and so many different personalities, and so many kind of just different ranges of, talent, personality, and just sort of generally who they are. I think that, when I worked in media, I mean, I led small teams, and when I did the Remixed Media Festival, it was a small team comparatively. And I think the biggest challenge was just like all of these people and trying to, sort of maintain sanity while I have 150 people that are, texting me and emailing me, calling me on the phone. I mean, it's just it can get really, really super crazy sometimes. And I appreciate your kind words, but I will say that at the beginning, I have gotten much better at this over the last 5 years than I was at the start. I felt like I had so much to learn, and I did, and I still have a lot to learn. But I mean, you remember there were times when I would just,
Lose
occasionally
it.
lose my shit.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that, but you know what? I wanted to find out about that, but I thought I would do this station, another station ID, because I didn't want to interrupt that part of the conversation. What do you think?
Sure.
So let's, you know what? I want to, we're talking about how great the station is and everything, and I want to promote our downloads. You can actually get an app for Radio Free Brooklyn on your phone, which is a great thing to have because we have such great programming, and you have a lot of time now, and you could be out taking a walk. And you could have such a great afternoon. It would be like a total variety of great music and talk and, comedy and politics and just you would be entertained for, you could be entertained for hours at a time for free. So I want you to go to radiofreebrooklyn.org and there's a download for iPhone and Android. Okay? There. And you're listening to Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. I'm here every Thursday, 2 to 3. And I'm here today with our station executive director and founder Tom Tenney on the occasion of the fifth anniversary birthday of Radio Free Brooklyn. So, Tom, you have personally changed a lot, I think. Have you?
Yes.
And so I want to hear, about that. I want to hear about how you've changed from the beginning and the end and the leadership. Where should we start, from the beginning, or
we can start wherever you like.
Go ahead on what you were saying.
Well, I mean, I was just going to say that, you know, leadership is a skill that has to be developed over time. And my discovery was that just because I could lead a team of 10 people at VH1 or 15 people at the Remix Media Festival does not necessarily qualify me for leading 150 people. And, you know, part of that, there were some really tough growing pains, I have to say. And like we were just talking about, like there were times when I would just absolutely lose my shit. Now, part of that, you know, part of it sort of getting better for me was this kind of snowball thing that I was talking about earlier, is that you get more and more dedicated, sort of more responsible people, people who are really, you know, into it more than some of the other people. Because, you know, if people, you know, one of the early shows that we had to let go was somebody who just would not remember to lock the studio, which is a really, really super important thing because we have lots and lots of expensive equipment there. And he did not understand why it was such a big deal, you know, because the last time he did it, I kind of lost my shit at him. And I said, imagine that you had a 2-year-old. And because he was like, well, nothing happened. And I said, okay, but imagine you had a little kid, you had a little 2-year-old, and I took that 2-year-old and I just walked out into the middle of traffic. Okay. Even if we didn't get hit by a car, you would never let me take your 2-year-old across the street again. Right. So, you know, but also, you know, one of the ways to that, one of the things that has helped has been being, you know, putting really clear processes and protocols in place for people and making sure that they just fully understand them up front. And so now I have, when we, you know, we don't have to do this hardly ever anymore, but if we do have to let a show go or somebody is sort of not living up to, you know, community, what we expect, then it's very, you know, dispassionate. It's very sort of like, you know, we you know, we told you up front what the deal was, and no hard feelings, you haven't met it, and we kind of now need to make room for people who, you know, who get it or who really want to do this and who want to take, you know, who want to take this seriously,
which they probably aren't surprised by when they finally hear
no that. Mostly not, mostly people are like, I totally get it, you know.
But how about on a personal level, Tom? Because I haven't so let's just say it, anger management, because I have noted, like, that's, it's, we know what, you know what I mean, right?
Yep, I do.
Yeah. So here's the thing, guys. Tom, I was really scared of Tom. And I think a lot of people were. We were all really scared of Tom because Tom, I don't think you realized how you were affecting people though, right?
I didn't. And you know, and that's my fault, really.
Well, no, there is no judgment at all.
I'm not saying your judgment. I'm saying that it was. I mean, I'm owning that.
You're taking responsibility, right? So, just so you guys understand what we're talking about here, is that
did Tinkerbell just come into your apartment? What is
yeah,
that?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I was wondering why my dog was staring at me. So what happened was Tom would. I mean, you were right most of the time, but you would just really yell. You would yell.
Yeah.
You would,
I mean, really, it wasn't a matter of being right or wrong, really. It was about how I handled stressful situations.
Yeah. And so what would happen, guys, is that Tom would get really angry and yell. And it's hard not to take that personally. I don't think you meant it personally, did you?
Never.
You didn't realize what you were doing. And so... but it was actually kind of a big deal because I noticed, and I'll tell you this, Tom, I noticed when I did, we used to have seminars at my apartment for a little while in the very beginning to like discuss how we could, you know, to learn about our shows and how to better them. And everyone at that apartment, at my apartment that would come over, was they were all terrified of you. They would be like, Tom said this, I'm afraid he's going to yell at me. You know that now, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it affected a lot of people, but I don't think anyway, it was a tone that affected the station. But what happened with you, Tom? Because you and I, you know, Tom and I talk a lot, but we haven't talked about this at all. So what happened in your head there? What happened there?
I mean, a few things. I mean, you know, one was just sort of learning as I go, right? Which mm-hmm. we talked about. You actually helped me with some stuff.
Oh, that's,
you know,
good.
The carrots mm-hmm. and all that, right? mm-hmm. And and then another significant, and this is going to, I'm going to reveal something sort of personal here. But you know, I've been on medication since 2008 mm-hmm. and I changed my medication about 2 years ago.
Oh.
And the difference is night and day, you know?
Really?
Yeah.
Really? That's excellent.
Yeah.
And can I say what the medication, because we talked about that on your first show.
Sure. It's called Lamotrigine.
Tell us what it is.
My diagnosis is bipolar 2, and which is, you know, sort of a less severe version of bipolar disorder. And I had been on Wellbutrin for major depressive disorder since 2008. And so when I was diagnosed bipolar 2, I went on this Lamotrigine, which is actually it's an anticonvulsant, mm-hmm. which so it's given, like, people with epilepsy take it also. Mm-hmm. But it is also sometimes prescribed for bipolar 2 or sometimes just for bipolar disorder, but it helps you manage your moods. And it is, you know, it's not as powerful as something like lithium, but it really, really, really helped.
Mm.
I mean, that to me is probably the biggest difference in me. Yes. In my sort of, you know, how I deal with the world, how that's changed over the past couple of years.
Wow, that's such a great testament to show how so many emotional issues have nothing to do with, are just purely physical like everything else, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, something I inherited from my dad. And, you know, for a long time in my life, I sort of had this idea that, you know, I don't want to be reliant on drugs for how I feel and so on mm-hmm. and so forth. And, you know, but that's kind of ridiculous, you know, when I think about it, because your whole body is chemistry, right? Mm-hmm. It's all chemistry, whether you're taking drugs or not, you know? So if there's something in your chemistry that can help you live a better life, why would you not do that? You
Absolutely.
Know? So, yeah.
Oh, that's
so thank that's you, Dr. Really Hirsch.
That's really good. So were you aware that, so you just honestly, it's not just that you're controlling your behavior or something like that. You just don't feel, were you feeling like that anger and you don't feel it the same way anymore?
Yeah, I mean, the anger used to take me over. It would be like it was somebody else. Right.
Wow.
And, you know, I still have moments when, you know, yeah. I feel the instinct for that to mm-hmm. happen. Mm-hmm. But now the difference is that I'm able to step away from it. I'm mm-hmm. able to take a breath, step away, and look mm-hmm. at it more objectively and realize that this isn't, you know, something that is the end of the world for me. Mm-hmm. It's just a, mm-hmm. you know, it's just a bump in the road, whatever. It's just your basic everyday challenge. I mean, I had a situation where I tried to order groceries from the grocery store to be delivered yesterday or 2 days uh-huh. ago. And it took 6 hours, and they still hadn't shown up. So I called them, and they were, and this was like now my lunch and my dinner, and I'm fucking starving.
Oh my God.
And so I called them, and they were like, oh, yeah, we got a little backed up today. Just call us in the morning. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? And I just went off, and I was just like, where I was about to go off. And I was like, you know what? And I was like, fuck you. And I just hung up the phone. You know what I mean? I was about to go into a long tirade about, you know, how they shouldn't be fucking with people during a pandemic. This is their food. This is, you know.
Good for you. Well, you know, so has it given you, like, did you realize that you were terrorizing people by getting angry at them? Or was it just like,
in a way, yeah, but also, you know, I'm a big guy. I am I'm very tall. For people who don't know, I'm 6'4". And I have realized since I was in college, really, that no matter how much of a baby face you have, no matter even how nice you are, you have to temper yourself a little bit more than people who are smaller than you, because the slightest look, glance, word can be, it's much more easily to interpret that as aggressive.
Yeah, well, people don't want you to kick the shit out of them.
Well, I mean, that is never going to happen. I'm not a shit out of people
but,
kicker.
You know, we're instinctual beings, and that's what we're dealing with, fight or flight, right?
Right, right. And you know, honestly, I mean, now being able to look at it more objectively, those times that I'm angry, I'm really more hurt than I am angry.
Interesting.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's almost like a sort of like, how dare you hurt me type of thing. Rather than just like, I'm so furious, I'm better than... No, it's a feeling, it's actually a feeling of vulnerability. It's a feeling of hurt. And a defensiveness around that hurt. I assume that that's what a lot of anger is, but certainly that's where a lot of mine came from.
So that's a lot of self-awareness. Have you been in therapy during this time, or is this like...
Only with you, Lisa. I wouldn't go anywhere else. You're the only one who gives a shit.
So you've made all these. Well, I know you've been in.
I have a psychiatrist, but that's not therapy.
That's a lot of self-awareness. Good for you. So yeah, that was something else I wanted to ask about. Like, how has running? I mean, we all see the Tom Tenney station director, but what you've accomplished and helped all of us accomplish. That must have changed your life out in the world and your drug, your new drug and that, all that stuff. Like, have you found, you know, your life different out in the world because of this station? Like, do you feel like, you know, more confident or more like, has it, you know, how, or like, do you have less time for people? Has it made you myopic? What's it like out there for you?
Well, you know, I'm going to let you in on another thing too, that, you know, is as much as I love doing the station, there are people who I really like at the station that I wish I could be really friends with, you know what I mean? But I feel like my role makes that less pot, you know what I mean? Makes it less, I mean, there are people who I am friends with. I'm friends with everybody on the management team, right? You know, but I'm also very conscious of my role at the station.
Right.
And just wish I could, you know, I don't want to ever ask anyone to go out for a beer with me because it might be misinterpreted. And you know what I mean? It's like, sometimes you don't want to feel like the principal. Sometimes you want to feel like another student.
Right. But it's also, I think that the station needs, I could see they need a, it's kind of like what my friend said to me today, which she says to her kid, I'm not your friend, I'm your mother.
Yes. Right, right, exactly.
And the station needs that kind of thing. Yeah, it's funny because being, you know, in management or in founding member, whatever, I don't really think about that with you. But I could see if I was, you know, in the mix of people, how that could be seen as like favoritism, or, you know, is my show doing some indication of extra approval? I could see how that would be.
Right, right, exactly. Or mm-hmm. if you're, you know, or if you're female, I don't want it to be seen as, you know,
You're hitting on. Yeah, hitting on the chicks.
Yeah, I don't. Right, I don't want
to. Can't hit on the chicks.
No, I can't. You know.
That's too bad because there's so many cute chicks.
Oh, tell me about it. but you know, I mean, I take my role very seriously, and you know, and that sort of comes along with it. So I guess there's, you know, there's sort of a loneliness factor also.
Right, right. You know? I see what you mean. Yeah. I see what you mean. Now, you teach also to make a living.
Yeah.
And tell us a little bit about that aspect of your life, like how the station or how the last 5 years has affected that part. Because that's an important part of your life, I think. I think you're good at it and I think you enjoy it.
I do. I enjoy teaching immensely. Mm-hmm. Obviously, this semester has been, you know, challenging with everything moving online and the university not being prepared for it whatsoever, which I think is kind of probably the case at most universities across the country.
Of course.
But yeah, I mean, I love it. I love, you know, it's interesting. I teach a film class right now. And I wasn't a film major, you know, I was a media arts major. I was a media studies major, and which is really all you need to, you know, in order to teach a film class that's non-technical, that's more on sort of the theory side. But I find that a lot of the stuff I end up teaching and my teaching style is relating it to the world and how this can kind of make them a better person, you know? And the students love it. They love that aspect of it because I'm not just sort of like the guy in the front, just sort of shoveling knowledge down their throats.
Wow.
You know, I'm helping them see movies in different ways and how to interpret art in different ways. And a lot of these kids, I mean, my heart is broken at the end of every semester because, I mean, these kids are going off into the world and I'm just like, I really hope that I made a difference somehow in their lives. And, you know, part of this is probably because I don't have kids of my own. So they're kind of they're my surrogates. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it is really important to me, and I have no idea how it's going to shape up for the fall with everything that's going on.
Right,
but
I really
hope that I get to continue
doing
it.
Do you think some of like what you've learned at the station? So you're kind of developing. What I'm hearing is you're kind of developing in a manager teacher track in both ways. Does that over?
Yeah, no, I would say that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah,
sure.
There's overlapping there.
Yeah. Oh, there's definitely overlapping. I mean, and that's part of why also, because I was teaching before I did Radio Free Brooklyn. And part of the reason that I really wanted to, you know, have an aspect of Radio Free Brooklyn be education, media education, media literacy, is that I feel like I used to teach media literacy when I taught at Hofstra, and it's kind of remarkable how illiterate a lot of kids are today when it comes to media. And mm-hmm. I felt like that's a place that we could have a really positive mm-hmm. impact. And also mm-hmm. where I could do teaching, you know, on my home turf, you know, at Radio Free Brooklyn. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
yeah. And you've started that program, Teens Take the Mic. And
yeah, RFB Teen Squad actually is what it was.
Teen Squad. Yeah. Oh, my God. Right.
Yeah.
And so there has been teaching for sure.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because just full circle, when I was listening to the show, the old show, I had some new observations about you, Tom, listening back for a few years.
All right.
I was thinking that you're really close to your mom, right?
Indeed.
Yeah, so I was thinking that you get a lot of your emotional needs filled from your mom because, so here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking that so much like what you're talking about now is that your world is very much a part of a fabric of a lot of other worlds. Do you know what I mean? It's not about there's not a, it's not about you, it's about you with a large group. And I was thinking that that you're able to do that because I think your mom, you have, we all have emotional needs. I think your mom's doing a good job. What do you think?
My mom has done a great job with me and my sisters. She is really like, and part of what I get from her is not just emotional, but like I've gotten inspiration from her
Really?
throughout my
Like, what do
whole
you
life.
mean?
Well,
That's so
I
cool.
mean, she was, she's somebody who, like me, is very, can be very idealistic and sort of, need to stand up for what's right. I mean, she was one of the
Sure.
she spent a lot of her life as an RN, and she was one of the, she called out a doctor in the 60s for sexual harassment before sexual harassment was a thing, Oh
Really?
yeah. Really, really a very remarkable woman. So, I do and supportive also.
Yeah, that's what I'm imagining. I'm imagining she's like really proud and supportive of you,
She
is
is.
she?
And, she said something the other day. I was on a Zoom call with my family, and she said something to the effect of, because I was talking about when I used to work in, for big media, and I worked for Oxygen and VH1. And I was talking about how, I miss the money.
Right, yeah.
And she was like, "Yeah, but you're so much happier doing what you do now." And I was like, "You're right." And like, what a great mom for saying that. You know what I mean? Because a
Oh
lot of
my
moms would be
God,
like, "Why aren't you
yeah.
still making the money?" And the, you know, and my mom just wants me to be happy. And that's the best kind of mom. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And by the way, guys, Tom could be making a lot more money. I mean, if you know what he's capable of. This is a choice. Another observation I had about you was that I think, and that speaks to that you could be making a lot of money or a lot more money or real money or whatever. Like you have the skills and the wherewithal that if you wanted to, the drive to have like a real job with a really good paycheck or maybe or a big money or a money-making business where the business was about making money, things like that. But I think that you like to have a certain amount of instability to keep you from becoming complacent. That you're afraid of becoming complacent. That's what I was going to say.
That I think that's partially true. I think though that one of the things that is characteristic of everybody in my family, from my sisters to my mom to my dad to everybody, is that we have a strong sense of service. As a, like nobody in my family became an entrepreneur who with like startups to make $1 million in the dot-com boom and like what, you know what I mean? Like, so, I have another sister who's also a teacher. I have a sister who was, a nurse practitioner for Planned Parenthood and then got her law
Wow.
degree, and so she's a lawyer now who helps out, with, she works in with domestic violence victims.
Wow.
And my mom was in, was in nursing. Both of my niece, my one of my nieces is in med school. The other one's in nursing school. My dad was a lawyer. You know what I mean? So my dad was a lawyer for underprivileged people. So it's like it's just in my blood, I think, to want to do something that has that has a positive effect on the world.
Wow, that is really idealistic. But the funny thing is like we would never have this station if it there is a very idealistic thread to it for sure.
Sure. Well, yeah,
And
and yeah. I mean, and people, because I wrote this book on how to start an internet radio station. I get emails all the time from people who've read the book,
Oh,
and a
yeah.
lot of people are, really interested in like how to, how do I make money with my internet radio station? And my answer is always like, look, if you're doing this to make money, do something else because it's mm-hmm. not commercially viable. We're a nonprofit. We do this for sort of the educational aspect and for the community service that it provides. But if you're looking to get rich on an internet radio station, mine probably was not the right book to read, and you maybe should look for to do something else.
Well, I think that's why it attracts people who are really committed and have a lot to offer, because I think if they saw that you were making money or doing it for money, or there was somebody was getting rich off of this, they would be able to question it. You know, they'd say, well, he's just telling me to do this because the station needs the money. But since it's never, I mean, we all need to keep the station afloat. Getting money, getting enough money is always an issue.
Sure, we need enough money, but right.
Right. But no one's ever like, well, this is a good way to make money. Or this is, you know, so I think that's why people can feel committed to it and feel like part of a community, because the mission of the station isn't to get and to make a profit, to make big profits.
No, I mean, and I also get a fair amount of emails from people who are like, who want a job. And, you know, I think that, I mean, that says something about the station, that this looks like a place where we could offer you a job and actually pay you a real salary. But no, we're volunteers. We're all volunteers. You know, and you know, I mean, I would love to get to a place where I could draw, you know, a small salary from Radio Free Brooklyn, but I'm happy, you know, keeping it going for mm-hmm. the community and all these passionate people that we have, you know, working with us. You know, so that's not necessarily a priority for me right now. Right now, all the money that we have or that we raise is going towards paying our rent for studios that are sitting there empty right now.
Right.
And for, you know, just basically keeping us afloat, able to broadcast from day to day.
Right. Well, that's a good segue, because we only have 8 minutes left, and I wanted to ask you about what you were thinking of the future for the station, your personal future. Like, how do you see things developing? Do you have a sense of it, or?
I mean, you know, it's,
that's a weird question.
It's a hard question. It's not a weird question. It's a hard question. Mm-hmm. And it's hard because, I mean, what I would love to see this, ultimately, my goal is to see this station as being fully self-sustaining, mm-hmm. you know, having a large donor base that we can, you know, as well as sort of, you know, foundational and government grants and that sort of thing. And if that were to happen, I would be happy to do this for the rest of my life, you know. I also want the station to be more involved with necessary community stuff. Like, I want one of the ideas that we talked about is going out into you know, some of the neighborhoods in Brooklyn and their community centers for, you know, sort of underserved communities. Like, you know, we met at one point with the Haitian Community Center to see if we could like help them get a radio station up and running in their facility. I would love to do that. I think it would be great for people in the community to learn how to do this stuff and to be actively a part of it. And then to launch another, you know, different streams for different communities, you know what I mean? So you could like tune into the Radio Free Brooklyn, you know, Haitian Community Network, or the Radio, Free Brooklyn, Laotian, if that's how you say it.
With different languages as well.
Totally. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, hopefully, you know, we'll get somewhere approximating that sometime soon. But, you know, right now it's just, especially during this mess, it's just everything's day to day.
Yeah. And do you see, like, eventually stopping teaching, or is that, you know?
Not voluntarily, no. We'll see what happens. It's a necessary part of my income right now. So
no, but I mean, do you like doing that? Is that something you'd ever want to stop doing?
No, I would like to just keep teaching in some form for the rest of my life.
Right, right. So what about, tell people about your life outside of the station and teaching. I don't really.
Okay,
is there
I'll start now.
Left?
And now I'm done. Right, yeah.
Is there anything left? I mean, I feel like we're friends and I also feel like it's really impossible to separate out the station. So is there anything besides your family, the radio station, and teaching?
Teaching and learning, I guess you would say. Those are really like kind of the three pillars right
now.
Well,
tell us about your show too. I forgot. It's my fault.
Oh yeah, it's on tonight. I'm gonna be live tonight from 8 to 10 p.m. My show is called Frequency Theory, and it's the format is kind of morphy right now. It's sort of I've been doing a lot of international non-English hip hop. But it's starting to morph into more of sort of, I wouldn't necessarily say freeform. I want it to be, because I write also, that's another thing that I do. So I want it to be sort of a blend of kind of like my writing with music, with ambience, with, you know, I don't know. I mean, and this is one of the reasons I love doing a show is that you can just sort of experiment from week to week and see what it is and where it wants to go. So if you want to tune in tonight for my birthday show, it's on 8 p.m., 8 to 10 p.m. on Radio Free Brooklyn. And I will be broadcasting from this very chair in my home that I'm sitting in right now.
You'll be doing exactly what you're doing.
I'll be doing exactly what I'm doing, except that I will have, some fancier equipment.
And it'll be your show.
And it'll be my show.
And there'll probably be some alcohol, I'm guessing.
There usually is, yes.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know about the writing. I don't think I knew about that. What writing?
I did a lot of writing in college. I've had some stuff published in academic journals. That's not really the writing I'm talking about, though. The writing I'm talking about is wanting to get back to the creative writing that I used to do a lot of when I was mainly in my 20s and 30s. Mm-hmm. And, a lot of that has sort of turned into kind of telling stories at bars now, my friend Noel, who also hosts a show on Radio Free Brooklyn, was like, you need to go to start going to storytelling,
yes.
Venues and
yes.
stuff. So I want to do that,
yes.
but I also want to just sort of use my show as kind of a trial for some of those things,
Oh, wonderful. That's good. That's good. Yes, you are really good at storytelling for sure.
Thank you.
So we've got 2 minutes left.
Minute and a half.
What else can I say?
I don't know. You're the host.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I am the host.
Yeah.
I'm the fucking host, guys.
I know. It's always weird to do when I help hosts broadcast live and I'm on my mic and you're on Zoom. So it's going to sound like I'm the host.
Yeah, and you look like you're the host because you've got the big mic.
I got to get
one of those mics.
Nobody can see me, though.
Well, I can, and you know I'm afraid of you, so.
Yeah, that's true. I'm speaking into a mic.
So I should get one of those mics. Is that a really good mic?
This one, I would not recommend this one for broadcasting. This is one that I just had. But this is called an ENG mic. It's a electronic news gathering mic. So it's like what like reporters use to interview people out in the field.
Oh, I see. Okay. So anyway. I want to say thanks so much for listening, everybody. Thanks so much for being here, Tom.
You're welcome.
And thanks so much for listening to Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit on Radio Free Brooklyn. I'm here every Thursday, 2 to 3. Stick around. We've got great programming this afternoon.
Bye. Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit.